physical meaning also in string theory. It does happen in string theory, and I have not quite properly. So let me just run through that example again, but a little bit more gradually, start from other examples that we've built up during the lecture. So let me just work in one dimension for simplicity. Take some space with the coordinate y and some function f of y. Say that the function goes to minus infinity at minus infinity and to plus infinity to plus infinity. Doesn't need to be monotonic, just that the endpoints are pointing in some direction. Then you might observe the following fact. We may observe that this integral is 1. So why is that? The delta function picks a contribution whenever the function crosses 0. This might happen multiple times. Now, at each of these points, you can use the delta function. But there is this fact that the integral of delta, that the delta function of f of y behaves like 1 over absolute value of df over dy delta of y. So this cancels this, except for a sign. So here you get, for example, a plus sign followed by minus and then a plus. The number of signs is always plus 1. And that way you can see it is just by changing variables from y to f. The integral over y is the same as the integral over f, although you go back and forth a few times. And so you get 1. Now, I've written in a BST formalism, we would write something like this. With the integral of the B and C goes pulls down the df of the y, and the integral of the B scalar gives me the delta function. And then we observe that this system has a BRST symmetry that sends Q of Y to C, Q of C to 0, Q of B to capital B, Q of capital B to 0. And this BRST symmetry is the reason this integral does not really depend on your choice of F, meaning that this action can be just written as IQ, well, whatever, I have to put an I, as Q of B F of Y. So a change in F just adds something exact to your action, Q exact to your action, just then doesn't change the answer. Okay. Now, nothing prevents me from adding some extra. Among all the deformations, I can do something like this. Of course. So if I'm given some integral e to the s of x dx, I can surely rewrite it as e to the S of x plus ib f of y minus x plus b df c dx dy db DC D capital B. And of course, now intuitively, so in this integral, right, I just inserted one, I did nothing interesting. The BRST operation here just send qx to 0, and again qy to c, qb to b, and etc. qb to 0, qc to 0. Now, I'm tempted, right, to integrate away capital B, get a delta function, and use the delta function to replace x with f of y. Right? It's a reasonable manipulation. Okay. But what happens to the BRST symmetry? Now, because I set x to be f of y, now naturally q of x is going to be dyf. Well, there is no x anymore, sorry. That is not a problem. q of y is still c. But now, what do I put here? Right, I need capital B, but capital B is gone. Now, the equations of motion for x would set capital B to be ds over dx. So I can just assume that's okay. But now the fact that I used sort of classical reasoning, I use equations of motions, hits me here, because when I compute q square of b, so this is definitely a symmetry, okay, this is fine. But when I compute q square of b, I get an expression which is proportional to the equation of motion for B. So this is where I got stuck. I'd forgotten that when I integrate away things, naively, the BRST symmetry remains there, but it might be only nilpotent up to equations of motion. Now, equations of motions in a path integral kind of vanish, but not quite, right? In quantum mechanics, the equations of motions hold the level of operators up to contact terms. Have you seen world identities before? Right. So world identities are just the statement. If some has some integral path or not path, it disintegrates by parts to zero. On the other hand, if I have some other operator, this does not integrate to zero, it integrates by parts to minus the derivative of this operator with respect of x. Now, in a normal integral, this is a pretty important piece. In a path integral for quantum field theory, funnily enough, is actually a bit less important because I showed it. If these, I should not have used little x because little x is also used for space-time. So let me just call it capital X. Okay. Because in quantum field theory, this functional derivative vanishes unless the operator and this variable are at the same location. In other words, if I take in quantum field theory, the equation of motions at some point, and I put an operator at some other point, the right-hand side will vanish unless the points coincide, because the functional derivative of a local operator with respect of a variable will vanish unless the operator and the variable are the same location. So this sort of troubles in the quantum field theory are unnoticeable unless your operators are actually colliding. So there are two ways to deal with this. One is called the BV formalism, which is something very high powered, used mostly in mathematical treatments of quantum field theory, which accounts systematically for equations of motion. It modifies the differential in such a way that equations of motions are exact by construction. And then you can adjust things in such a way that this becomes zero. It is a high-powered and unfamiliar formalism, partly because the BRST symmetry stops being a derivation. In the BV formalism, I don't want to discuss BV formalism much because we're not going to use it at all, but just something to keep in mind. But the BV formalism somehow is a little bit more nonlinear than the BRST formalism. And it happens precisely because it tries to account for things like the collision of operators at the same position. Now, suppose that I wanted to run the usual naive argument that says that if I have a BRST symmetry and I add something exact, Danza would not change. Okay. With some coefficient, you know, some small coefficient. Well, this really means the integral, you know, we are changing in actions. We really are, in quantum field theory, we've been integrating an operator. Space-time, right? Now, when I integrate this operator on the space-time, two things happen. First of all, I will generally hit other operators. And furthermore, when I expand out this exponential, I have many insertions of O, you know, these interactions which are moving all around in space-time and occasionally hit each other. So if I have BRST anomalies of the sort, this sounds a warning. It says, wait, in this sort of theory, you need to be careful. When you change the action, you might have to redefine your BRST operator, deform your operators, and you might also have to be careful and add higher order terms to make sure that things remain BRST closed and BRST with a good BRST symmetry. So these BRST anomalies are usually telling you, wait, the space of actions which have a good BRST symmetry is not a linear space. It's a complicated nonlinear space, and you need to move along this nonlinear space when you deform your theory. This kicks in string theory in very interesting ways. I mean, BRST anomalies, far from being some unpleasant mathematical thing, are the place where most of the physics goes and hide. So, for example, I mentioned things like the couplings of string theory become naturally dynamical, become naturally actually quantum fields. This, in a sense, is These facts can be uncovered, among other ways, by just digging out precisely what the Beresteyn anomalies are and how do they work. So I'm not going to do it, but just something to remember. Interesting things can happen when punctures, when operators collide, or when I try to deform my theory. For example, if I take my string theory and I try to change the metric it propagates in, but I want to keep the system, the structure working, I want Beresteyn symmetry to survive. At the leading order, the fluctuations of the metric will have to satisfy linearized equations of motion for gravity. But Beresteyn anomalies will force them to become actually nonlinear. So the changes in the metric will have to satisfy the full nonlinear equation, Einstein equations. Or another interesting situation is when, we'll find that when you have string worksheets which have some sort of a long tube that propagates for a long time in space-time, this is another place where Beresteyn anomalies hide, but Beresteyn anomalies are encoding all sorts of interesting infrared divergences, infrared physics in the theory. So there is sort of a big self-consistent structure, and Beresteyn symmetry plays an absolutely crucial role in making everything work. And every time the Beresteyn symmetry looks like it's getting violated, it's because there is some physics that has not been properly accounted for. This is part of the reason I'm torturing you through doing Beresteyn quantization in detail, because if you want to understand string theory more than just words, it's really important. So if you want to understand the underlying workings of string theory, typically when people use string theory, then somebody else has done these inner working calculations and they just use the results. But if somebody wants to push string theory forward one day, you have to also understand the inner workings. Anyway, so in this example, we follow this play sort of game. We took something that gave one, inserted inside an integral, and then remanipulated the integral. This is also how Beresteyn symmetry in gauge theory is usually introduced. The main difference is that, so in gauge theory applications, y is going to live on the group. It's going to be a variable on the group. So it's definitely not a flat variable. If you remember, when you define these sort of transformations and you do a change of coordinates, the C-ghost also had to transform as a vector. This is a bit of an annoyance because our final aim is to get rid of the group and keep the ghosts. And this does not work very well if the ghosts transform in a non-trivial way as I move around the group. But for groups, there is a sort of improvement of this structure, which uses the fact that essentially there are canonical vector fields on a group, a basis of canonical vector fields on a group. More precisely, whenever a Lie group acts on a space, the infinitesimal action of the group gives me a bunch of vector fields. In every action of the group, there is an action of the Lie algebra. By vector fields. So concretely, you have a bunch of vector fields that I can denote with symbols like this, and they have these brackets which mimic the brackets of the Lie algebra. I assume you guys have seen a little bit of Lie groups and Lie algebra. Okay. So this is true in particular when the group acts on itself by multiplication. So the group itself has these vector fields, which are actually invariant under the action of the group, which allows you to define a nice complex where Q of an element of the group, if I were good, I would be able to write Gothic stuff. And okay, pretend this is a Gothic G. Now, this little g instead is an element of the group. Okay? So you can say Q of G is the Lie derivative, is this vector field acting on G contracted with a Ghost. Now, as you remember, when these vector fields don't commute, you get an extra term in the transformation of the Ghosts. Okay. And then on top of this, I can put the usual B Ghosts to impose constraints and write an integral like this. I have an integral over the group. It's not a path integral, I just mean the integral of the group with a measure. So first of all, fact, groups have a nice group invariant, Lie groups have a nice Lie invariant, group invariant, have a nice integration measure on them, which is invariant under group, the group action. So I'm gonna use this measure here. And then I just want to integrate a delta function, okay? Again, so. Okay, and I get an action like that. So the main difference is that instead of just taking a derivative with respect of the variable, I'm acting with a vector field. Okay. Again, this is just Q of B I F of G. So it's completely analogous to what we had there. So this integral, if I pick my f's correctly, it's going to be 1, okay, or some other constant, which is independent of small deformations of the gauge fixing. Okay, now I'm going to insert this 1 inside some gauge invariant, but integral I want to regularize. So I imagine I have some other integral or some variables with an action, and the action is invariant under the action of the group. So the group is a symmetry. And the measure too is invariant under the symmetry. So I have a nice non-normal symmetry acting on these variables x. Then I can just insert this in here. And I can do something neat, which is as a function, I can take a function of g, I take a function of x and put as an argument the function of g of x. So let me take f of g to be just some function of g of x. So I take some function of x, which is not invariant under the group. Definitely not invariant in the group. This is going to be my gauge fixing condition, so you want it as not invariant as possible under the group. And you act with the group element on the argument. Now, acting by this vector field on this group element, acting on X, is the same as acting with the vector field on X, meaning the G action on X is defined by vector fields. These vector fields are essentially the infinitesimal group action. So I can just write, well, okay, for now, I'm just acting still on the group, okay? But in a moment, so at this stage, I had the same BRST transformations as I had here, and Q of X is 0, okay? I've done nothing. But the interesting step is to do now a change of variables. I'm going to change variables from G of X to X. After all, G is a symmetry. What can prevent me from doing that? So, assuming I have one more board, okay. Now, you know what? I can still work with this board. So this is the same as, so I change my variables, my action, my measure invariant, so nothing happens. But now, my function becomes a function of X only. And even this kinetic term becomes a function of X only. As I was saying, the vector field acting on G of X, on G in G of X, becomes the same as the vector field acting on X, pretty much by definition. You can convince yourself of these two examples. So G disappeared. So here there was still the G, the C, the B, the B. So you have the X, the G, the B, the C, the B. So if I was trying to define my integral modulo G, then I'm in luck because G is only here. Sort of an overall factor. I can get rid of it. And I landed on the gauge fixed BRST invariant action. So what happened? G, little g is gone, but X has been replaced by G of X. So now the BRST symmetry acts on it. Sorry, this is gone. I wanted the next row. Okay. And then I have the usual action QB equal to capital B. Okay. Here, no problems, no anomalies, and nothing untoward. This is a perfectly fine action with an off-the-shell BRST symmetry. And this is a starting point for, say, quantization of quantum field theory. Usually, if you do quantum electrodynamics in a Lorentz invariant fashion, you don't want to throw away any degrees of, you don't want to actually gauge fix. You don't want, you can go in things like axial gauge, or even better, how do you call it, light cone gauge, where you explicitly use gauge symmetry to throw away one of the components of your connection. If you want to do that, then definitely you want to impose the equation for B to get a delta function, which allows you to throw away some part of your fields. But usually in quantum field theory, you don't have to do that. Perhaps you might want to add something like these to regularize the B path integral a little. This is perfectly fine because it's a Q closed, Q exacting. And this is a perfectly valid starting point for doing QED, for doing QCD, the Xi gauge. But it's not good for us, because as you remember, our action depended on the position of the string worksheet in a nice quadratic way, but it depended on the metric in a horrid non-polynomial way. To make sense of the path integral, we really need to get rid of the metric by imposing H-fixing conditions, by using diffeomorphisms and wild symmetry to make that metric locally flat. So we will have to integrate away B, get the delta function, and then we'll have to put here something that comes from the equation of motion. And then we will land in this situation where we have a BRST symmetry which works on shell and has the possibility of interesting anomalies when operators collide. But these anomalies will be completely invisible for most of our calculations. Essentially, a good way to think about these delta functions is that when you define a symmetry in quantum field theory, you usually have a current. So when you want to define Q acting on some operator, you will define it by putting the operator at some point and integrating on a sphere around it some current. Or in the plane, it will be just a contour integral of the current around your operator. When you use this definition, you're essentially assuming that other operators are away so that you can go around this one. So whenever we do calculations with OPEs, with nice contour integrals and things like that, we will never see these BRST anomalies. They will pop out when we try to go to limits where operators collide. Or when we try to explicitly deform the action, say to have the string moving in a non-trivial space-time. So when they are needed, they will pop out, but usually they will be invisible. Okay. So let's proceed. Let's do this for string theory. Now we have all the tools and all the scaffolding. Now, I have to confess that in the notes, I didn't do things in the most in the simplest possible way. I will try to have an edited version of the note at some point in the next 2 weeks, but I've been a little bit behind with editing them. So essentially, so in principle, we had to apply these machineries to diffeomorphisms and vial symmetry. But actually, it turns out that if you just do it for diffeomorphisms, at the end of the calculation, the vial symmetry drops out anyway. So doing it for diffeomorphism and vial symmetry is a bit of an overkill. So let me just do it for diffeomorphisms. So I need to find a gauge fixing condition that forces my metric to be proportional to the diagonal or proportional to some reference metric. So let me say some reference metric. If I want to be really precise, I would denote it like this. I would say there is a family of reference metrics, okay, parameterized by some parameters. I can do it. Okay, so but it's a bit of an overkill at the beginning, so let me perhaps do it towards the end of the class. For now, let's just be naive and say that the reference metric is some delta AB. So I do things locally. Okay. Then, what gauge fixing condition can I use? Suppose I take my Gauss B to be traceless C symmetric tensors. So it means in particular that BAB, no, that BAA is zero, and BAA is zero. Then I can take a gauge fixing condition or the form delta of HAB B, sorry, not delta. Okay, my gauge fixing condition can be written as by a term like this. Because see, when integrated with capital B, I get a delta function, but a that sets to zero all the components of the metric, which correspond to components of to non-zero components of B. So if B was just a symmetric tensor, this would set the metric to zero. Because it's a traceless tensor, it will set the metric to be proportional to the identity. So this will fix HAB to be proportional to delta AB. So now that we have the gauge fixing condition, we can just do everything. We can in particular get the action for the ghosts. So our total action will be the action for the fields, which initially depends on the metric, plus BAB HAB plus, now we need to get the ghost action. Here we put BAB, and here we need to put the variation of the metric under a BRST transformation. Remember that the variation of something under a BRST transformation is just given by the C ghosts, by a transformation, a gauge transformation whose parameters are the C ghosts. So the metric changes by the diffeomorphisms in the following way, which means that the ghost action will have something like DACB plus, well, just DACB, because then, anyway, this is symmetric. Okay, so we arrived at the action on the worksheet. Then you integrate away capital B and set the metric to be flat. You go in a conformal gauge, and you land on the nice del x, del bar x, plus b del bar c, gz, well, maybe I should put some indices. It's convenient to lower the indices of B and raise the ones of C. Okay. And you get something like this. Sorry, I was a bit too hasty. Sorry. Of course, I should really put a metric here still. I mean, the metric is only proportional to the wild transformation, to a diagonal metric. But the action for the fields, matter fields, is while invariant. And it turns out that the action for the ghosts is also while invariant. So the ghost for the firm of isms is actually value invariant. It is a piece of luck, which means that the vile factor just drops out completely. Just out there in overall in front of the path integral, we get rid of it. We don't need to do any fancy gauge fixing for that. Of course, to make sure that everything works, we need to check that BRST symmetry is still there and is still nilpotent. And also we need to make sure that this action is value, not only the action is value invariant, but the measure is also value invariant. So we need to make sure that the integral in dx, the b, the c is value invariant. Sorry, here was a complex conjugate. Well, as I was mentioning, so there is an anomaly to be checked. We already computed that each of the positions have a vile anomaly of 1 unit. And now tomorrow we'll compute the anomaly for this, and we'll find minus 26. And so we'll finally understand why we need to have 26 directions in the bosonic string. Okay, so this is the point where we needed to land. So these are the sort of things we need to understand the worksheet theory. We already understood the free bosons. Now we need to understand the ghosts. That will be the topic of the next lecture. Now, perhaps in the last, well, there are a few more observations I need to make that are in order. The most important observation is about what happens to the BRST symmetry. So, well, for example, the way this BRST symmetry acts on the matter field, it acts by the diffeomorphism with parameter the ghosts. So that's easy. The way it acts on the ghosts can also be figured out. You look at what is the algebra of diffeomorphisms, and you'll find something which has some C, the C here, with appropriate indices. I'm not going to write it down. Okay. But crucially, there's a question: what happens to the ghosts? And now we need to put the equations of motion. We need to check what the equation of motion tells us about what capital B is. So if I vary with respect to the metric, I get an equation that says B equal the variation of the action with respect to the metric, both the matter and ghost action. The variation of the action with respect to the metric is just a stress tensor. So my equation, my BRST symmetry, will have to map the B ghosts to the total stress tensor. See, this is how BRST symmetry handles the constraint, the classical constraint that the stress tensor vanishes. It makes it exact. And so it drops out. And again, with a bit of work, you can show that if you ask a Q on the stress tensor, you get something that vanishes as long as the equations hold, which in this particular case means as long as the stress tensor is conserved. Because again, the stress conservation of stress tensor in a quantum mechanical theory is a worded entity. It holds away from other local operators. It follows some equation. It's an equation of motion. It follows from the equation of motion. There is, and right. Another thing that is worth observing is that this action has a symmetry called the ghost number symmetry, just a U1 symmetry, which gives charge minus 1 to B and 1 to C. This was true for all these actions that we wrote down. This ghost number symmetry is interesting because it keeps track of the mismatch between the number of Bs and the number of Cs in your path integral. See, let's go back to the simplest example. An example is going to be a good example. See, suppose I have a finite dimensional setup. If my gauge fixing condition is good, I have essentially as many independent constraints as degrees of freedom, which means I have as many Bs and Cs. When I do this path integral, I pull down this action, a bunch of copies of this action. There are always as many Bs as Cs in the action. The integral is non-zero. But suppose that my gauge fixing condition was not quite strong enough or was a bit too strong. Then I would have more Bs than Cs or more Cs than Bs, and then my integral would be zero unless I insert extra Bs and Cs. The way you can think about it is that there is an anomaly in the symmetry. Usually, a path integral is non-zero if the thing I'm integrating is invariant under symmetry. The measure is invariant under the symmetry. If there is a different number of Bs and Cs, then the measure is not invariant under a charge, under a symmetry which rotates Bs and Cs in opposite ways. In a quantum field theory, the number of Bs and Cs in your path integral is infinite. So you might wonder what's the precise meaning of the difference between Bs and Cs. But there is a meaning. Another way to understand the mismatch between the number of Bs and Cs is that this kinetic term has zeros. See, if you think about this as a matrix, if I have a good gauge fixing condition with as many Bs and Cs, then this is a matrix which is invertible. If the gauge fixing condition is not good, or if the number of Bs and Cs are mismatched, this matrix is rectangular, is not invertible, and it has zero modes. So this remains true even in infinite dimensional setup. If you look at the kinetic term of the ghosts, it might have zero modes, a certain finite number of zero modes. And the number of zero modes for Bs and Cs can be mismatched, and this signals an anomaly. Now, when you have a mismatch in the gauge fixing conditions and gauge symmetries, it's not a tragedy. You just need to amend your gauge fixing conditions. For example, suppose that your gauge fixing condition was a bit too strong. Okay, what you could do is to relax it. You could say, let me add some extra parameters, which allow me to relax the condition a little bit. So I want to impose not that this condition is that these are zero for specific S, but for some S. Well, one way I can do it is by adding S to my integral, and then to make sure that I still have VRST symmetry, I'll add some fermionic guys. Now, if I do Q of BF, sorry, I meant to do this, I get an extra term which looks like B DSF sigma. And then if I can just do the sigma integral and pull this down as an insertion of B DSF in my path integral. So when I have constraints that are too strong, I can insert extra Bs, which come equipped with natural, I want to put the DS in here, with a natural measure on the space of deformations. This will happen precisely here when we remember that we cannot make the metric everywhere flat, but we can make it depend. We can bring it to some canonical form labeled by a choice of complex structure. Then our gauge fixing condition will be BAB, HAB, but now we impose that BAB, H hat, AB, lambda equal to zero. Okay. And the final result is that we'll get some B insertions, which build up a measure to integrate over the space of matrix. Conversely, we might have situations where the gauge fixing conditions are not strong enough, and we need to insert some C's, some extra C's. Anyway, just this is a warning. When we do the calculations, we'll have to make sure the number of C's and B's are correct. And things will always be sensible, meaning that when the path integral for the B's and C's would require us to put extra insertions, is also precisely the situation where the gauge symmetries and gauge fixing conditions are not perfectly matched, and we needed to insert those anyway. I was saying that the mismatch between the B's and C's is measured by something called by the anomaly of the Gauss number current. The Gauss number current, so it's a current you get from this action just by using usual Noether theorem. So it's just BC. So it has two components. Okay, with here I mean ZZZC. Okay. And you can check if this is conserved. And when the manifold is not, when the metric is not. And you find that it's very similar to the Weyl anomaly, meaning the violation of this current conservation vanishes in flat space. But when you have a metric which is non-trivial, it does not vanish. There is an anomaly which is proportional to the curvature. So the final result is that the total Gauss anomaly will depend on the total curvature on my surface, which is also closely related to the topology of the surface.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm a little confused with this modification that you made here with the S's and the sigmas.
Yes.
So S was a boson, and sigma was a fermion.
That's right.
So maybe I'm just missing something, but like so when you added like the little b's and the large b's, you were just like you were modifying the BRST complex in like negative degrees and mm-hmm. in like a contractible way. So zeroth cohomology wouldn't get messed up, but here you're modifying mm-hmm. the BRST complex in like positive degrees, right? Because it's taking a boson to a fermion. So how do you know you'll still get the same?
Oh, I'm giving the definition of something well defined. So without this is a new complex. The old complex didn't quite work because it gave me a delta function which had no zeros. So I was not getting an answer that was meaningful. With this relaxed complex, there is a meaningful, it's something meaningful, and it's my definition of what the answer should be. And now this path integral, instead of just giving me a number, will give me a form that I can integrate over the space of this extra space of freedom. So something like the space of complex structures on the Riemann surface. Okay. And now, in our calculations, we'll always do three-level calculations. So the topology of the surface will be very, will have no loops. But anyway, so this will make things a bit simpler. But anyway, if you look at say, Polchinski for the expression for a string theory amplitude in general genus, in general number of loops, it comes equipped with a bunch of B insertions, which build up the measure of integration in the space of complex structures. Okay, so this is more or less the end of the most complicated part of the lectures, because so tomorrow we're gonna do things, we're gonna study the ghosts, we're gonna do things, just, you know, just, it's again, it's a free field theory, it's nothing fancy. It's a free field theory. You can work on it as a free field theory, you can work with it using OPEs. I don't know if you guys have seen ghost-like things, but they behave very much like fermions. So if you've seen up OPEs of fermions, the ghosts are very similar. Then I just, they just have quantum numbers which are a little bit shifted, because one of them is a true form and the other is a vector field. But otherwise it's going to be straightforward. So we're going to build a Hilbert space with oscillators. We're going to combine it with the Hilbert space for the scalar fields. We're going to look at BRST closed and BRST exact things and find the BPS, find again the string spectrum. At least find the constraints which you used last week to derive the string spectrum. So that will allow us to understand fully what goes on watch sheets with the topology of a tube. Then we need to move to scattering amplitudes. In order to do scattering amplitudes, we need to learn how to do quantum field theory calculations on a space-time which has long tubes. We use something called the state operator map, which is a trick you might have learned from conformal field theory too, which allows us to collapse these long tubes to points on the surface and reduce ourselves to a nice calculation really on the plane with some extra operator insertions. We'll compute the correlation function, then we'll integrate it on a space of complex structure for a simple example, and get us the simplest string theory scattering amplitude. That will, I believe, take most of this week. So we will probably spend a little bit of time discussing how these scattering amplitudes look like, because I want to see these sort of statements I made early on that strings are fluffy and stuff like that. Then I'll try to discuss how deformations become fields. So I will learn how to see the Einstein equations coming out of string theory. I'm not sure that will fit in this week or beginning of next week. And after that, we'll devote a bit of time to interesting phenomena like t-duality and other simple perturbative dualities, which sort of show you how geometry becomes richer in string theory, in quantum field theory. And then at least part of the last week will be devoted to superstring theory. So I'll start again from the beginning. I will look at quantum field theory path integrals with fermions and then mimic it to define fermionic strings and hopefully get at least to discuss the spectrum of superstrings. At some point in all of that, I dream of also discussing B-brains, but that will depend on how fast I can go. We are missing a couple lectures in total from these 3 weeks because we lost last Monday, and we're going to lose another lecture, I think. But we are getting extra 15 minutes exactly at the beginning of a couple lectures. We'll see how that balances out. But let me know if you feel that the pace is going too fast. I can always stop and devote a lecture just to look at more carefully things we've done. It's getting a bit late. If you still have one question for today, ask it now. Otherwise, you can ask tomorrow morning.
Okay. Yeah, I'm still a bit confused about this point. Like, I thought the purpose of the delta function is you want to choose like a nice representative of the action in the zeroth cohomology. But the zeroth cohomology should still recover the same quotient, right? Like you're you're still...
So we're trying to produce something that we will integrate over the space of of this extra parameter space. So actually, I think you're trying to produce a form. It might live in cohomology, in positive cohomology, anyway. I don't know if this statement helps at all, but this part integral is trying to produce a form on the space of complex structures on the Riemann surface, the top form on the space of complex structures. I don't know if that helps. But again, I want to stress, it's not that we are modifying something which already works. We have something that would not work unless we do this.
Let me think about this.
Okay. So without this modification, the path integral will be zero. Okay.